Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lamb today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, buy now, can't pay later. This Is Money has been investigating the terrifying price tag of the booming industry tempting millions of shoppers into debt, and so-called influencers aren't helping. Simon has some tips if you're trying to avoid Amazoning it this Christmas, while help is also at hand for those with a business idea but lack the know-how. The Bank of England leaves rates at a record low of 0.1% as it awaits the outcome of Brexit talks, and Grace is on the case, or will be revealed. Don't be getting stabbed today. With all the latest breaking money news, just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, anyone who shops online will know what we're talking about, I think, by now. It's happened, I think, pretty quickly over the last months, year perhaps. But when you shop on many of the big retailer sites, it comes to paying for your goods. You might notice now you get the option to pay by something called Klarna in installments. It sounds too good to be true. You don't pay interest on it, and you don't have to pay everything all up in one go. However, a number of Instagram influencers have got in trouble recently for promoting Klarna as a way to make yourself feel good during the current crisis. All right, so it's not very responsible, Lee, certainly. But is there really something so wrong with buy now, pay later services? Now, Lee, regulars to the podcast will know this isn't a subject that is new to us. You've discussed it with us in the past. Klarna, who are they? What do they do?
So that's right, Georgie. At the start of the year, I actually did a big sort of look at the buy now, pay later industry, because it was really starting to snowball then. And during the pandemic, it snowballed even more. So Klarna are the biggest player in the buy now, pay later market. They're currently now the highest valued startup, fintech startup in Europe. It's worth something like £5 billion, perhaps even more now. And it's made a splash, not just in the UK, but the rest of Europe, also in the States and in Australia. And what it allows consumers to do is to split the payments of any kind of item that they're buying. So, for example, if you're buying some clothes on a website, if it offers Klarna or another type of buy now, pay later method, you could split it over three payments with Klarna. It does offer sort of other products as well, but that's its main one, this option to slice. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of other players in the market as well. PayPal are doing a similar thing, as are ClearPay and Layby. And they offer, I think Layby, you can do it over 6 months, for example. So what it means is people can make these purchases and essentially spread the cost. Now, the big problem...
Interest-free. So how do they do that model then?
The big part of this model is that, for example, let's take the clothes shop as that example. When people tend to use this buy now, pay later kind of payment, they tend to put more in their basket because they're sort of kicking the can down the road, so to speak, when it comes to payments. So instead of maybe paying 30, 40 quid for something, they might load up their basket of £150 worth of goods. And there's been studies that show that when people use buy now, pay later, they're more likely to spend far more money with the retailer than they would without it. And a lot of people now are, the survey that I had done at the start of the year suggested that a fifth of people would avoid using retailers that didn't have this buy now, pay later system. Now, that might be a little bit high, but that was the figure we had in the survey of 1,000 people. And that's an interesting shift in habit of how people are spending and how they're viewing this. And you're right, it's interest-free. So the big problem with it is that it's unregulated, because although it's credit, because it doesn't charge interest, it's almost like a loophole from old rules that were written in the sort of 70s about this around credit. So it basically means they sidestep this regulation. Now, in the story that we've had this week, all of the companies that are we've mentioned in there, the buy now, pay later industry, have said that they'd be happy to be regulated. And I think the regulation for this is going to have to happen sooner rather than later, because more and more people are using this, especially the younger generations. And you touched on it there, Georgie, some influencers have got in trouble for basically suggesting in some posts over the pandemic to almost like buy yourself happy, you know, buy these products to give you a pandemic boost. And, you know, pushing people onto websites that use these Klarna services. And it just encourages people to spend money that they don't have. That's the thing, you know, people might say, okay, it's good to spend, not good, but you know, you want to buy this item, if I could spread it over 3 months interest free, fantastic. And if you play by the rules, in my opinion, that is a good way of funding something. You know, not everyone could save up for what they want. Of course, in an ideal world, that's what you would do. You'd have the money that you've saved to buy something that you want. But look, this is 2020 now, Georgie. We've lived in decades of being reliant on credit. Credit cards have been around for a very long time. Credit cards often have a sky-high APR.
Well, that's it, Lee. What's the difference, or what's the problem with Klarna as opposed to credit cards? Because if you don't have to pay interest, it spreads it out. You were going to buy the product anyway, although you're saying that people tend to buy more. What difference does it make if you have a credit card where you have to pay, presumably, a lot of people might do, unless it's a 0% purchase card, quite a lot of money in interest if you don't pay it all in one go.
The thing is, though, it's kind of people fall into that trap of knowing that it's 0% interest. And if you play by the rules, and it's like like reward credit cards, for example, if you play by the rules, you know, you can benefit from using it. So I'm not going to sit here and say the buy now, pay later industry is completely bad and it should be abolished and it's a terrible thing. What it does do, and what it studies have shown, is that people will spend more, and on the whole, these are younger shoppers. These are people probably under the age of 30 that may then find themselves getting into trouble paying this off, because if you go to one shop and use one of these services, but then you're doing it numerous times at numerous shops, you can see how people can get into a spiral of debt and can't pay off the whole thing. And we've had all sorts of industries in recent times, haven't we, Georgie, that have come and gone. For example, I think something like on the high street, when we have things like Bright House, you know, people buying a fridge freezer for £500 but ended up paying about £1,000 or £1,500. You know, in my mind, that is atrocious. That is really bad. Payday lenders, again, if you play by the rules of this, it's fine. It's if you don't, and then you start finding your credit history getting in trouble with you, or if you start getting bailiffs at the door because you haven't paid off and you've taken on more than you can chew.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you before we bring Simon in, is in terms of the money, what happens if you can't pay back, let's say over 3 months, three installments? How much does it rack up? How does it compare to other things?
See, this is the big issue. Not a big issue, but it's a kind of a grey area, because sometimes we don't really get the full answer as to what happens to your credit score if you fall behind on these payments. And actually, a lot of the time, they're not huge amounts of money, but that's beside the point. Some of them actually add on fees for if you don't make a payment. That's a kind of standard thing. If you didn't pay off one instalment, you get charged, I think £6 is one of them, for example. Mm-hmm. Klarna doesn't do that. But eventually you won't just get away with not paying the debt. Eventually they will chase you down for the debt, could go on your credit record, you could be chased down by bailiffs, all of those kind of things that are associated with the credit industry. And I think influencers, Georgie, need to kind of
I'm going to talk to you about influencers, don't worry, Lee, because that's a whole nother subject in this of itself. But Simon, just quickly, your views on this, not quickly, take as much time as you like, I don't mind.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about influencers, we should talk about the fact that the CEO of Klarna is Snoop Dogg. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry, my mistake from the adverts. I mean, I love Snoop. I don't know whether I really want Snoop to be promoting Klarna. I quite like Snoop's Klarna adverts because they're quite funny. But no, he's Klarna as well, isn't he, Lee?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Just Eat.
Doing well.
I mean, you know, if you're Snoop and you're sitting around smoking all day, you get hungry and you maybe buy some stuff on the internet. It's legal where he is. In theory, buy now, pay later makes perfect sense, and not just if you're Snoop Dogg, because you are effectively spreading the cost of stuff out and it's interest free. And as Lee said, if you play by the rules and you pay it all back, then you're the winner. And in fact, in a way, the retailer is actually subsidizing you. The retailer is subsidizing you to be able to spread your payments over a manageable period of time and pay no interest. It's almost like a cashback thing, isn't it? You know, you're getting the small amount of cashback that you get back is like getting a tiny amount of interest on the money you've spent. What you're doing is you're saving a bit of interest on the money you've spent. And actually, the interest on money you spend on short-term stuff, you know, credit cards and things like that, broadly speaking, is quite high. So actually, it's quite a decent return. You're better off having the money in your pocket. The problem is, as Lee says, is that it's the people who don't meet all the payments and suddenly find they end up spending a lot of money. It's quite difficult to ascertain exactly how much that's costing people and whether it is impacting their credit files. You've got to bear in mind that with any industry that effectively offers you free money, there's going to be enough people not making the payments that they're making money off the back of it. It's slightly different with the buy now, pay later, because they're also taking money in from the retailers. But it's the same with the whole credit card balance transfer deal. You know, they're not offering you 3 years of free interest on the basis that everybody manages to pay off their debts over those 3 years. And it's an altruistic gesture by credit card companies to help people get out of debt by not paying interest. They're offering it to you because there's enough people who fall foul of the rules and end up paying a high enough rate of interest that they can offer free interest to loads of other people. But then there's also a similar situation going on here to one of the issues with the payday loan thing. And I am not comparing payday loans with buy now, pay later, because payday loans were a hideous high interest product. Buy now, pay later is attractive to people because it's a zero interest product. But one of the problems with the whole payday loan thing, and I remember having a conversation with Errol Damlin, he of Wonga fame, at Wonga's, the height of Wonga's sort of boom time, when we were seeing a huge amount of fraud going on, actually. People were having Wonga loans taken out in their name, and then somehow the loan was ending up into someone else's bank account. And we were arguing that this shouldn't be able to happen, because obviously Wonga did know where the loan had gone to, had the name on the bank account. So were they chasing that money down? And they kind of refused to answer that question to us. And it indicated that something was up at Wonga, because effectively they were just writing this fraud off as a cost of doing business, because they were refunding people. It was just like refunding people if it happened to. And they thought we had it in for them. We explained that we'd never had that kind of volume of complaints about anything before. And I mean, in fact, it happened to a certain Mr. Lee Boyce, I think. Didn't you get Wonga frauded? Yeah. So, you know, there was something going on there. But putting that to one side, Mr. Damlin's argument was that who were we to make a moral judgment on people who wanted to buy something but couldn't afford to do it right at the time? So if somebody wanted to buy Glastonbury tickets and they couldn't afford to pay for them outright at the time, who were we to make a moral judgment about them taking out a Wonga loan to buy Glastonbury tickets? My argument was that if somebody has to take out a high interest loan to buy Glastonbury tickets, they probably shouldn't be buying the Glastonbury tickets. If flip that around, you know, to something like buy now, pay later, then if we're certainly not in any moral position to be saying to people, well, if you can't afford to pay for it, you shouldn't be spreading the cost out with 0% interest in installments. You can't make that kind of moral judgment. But what you can say is the problem is it makes it easier to buy stuff, and you don't feel the pain of purchasing big ticket items in the way that you do when you have to go out and spend a few hundred pounds on it. Because you've either got a few hundred pounds in your bank account or you don't have a few hundred pounds in your bank account. And when you pay for something that costs a few hundred pounds, even if you did have that in your bank account, you feel that in your bank account. You're like, ooh, I had £300 more yesterday than I do today because I just bought something that costs £300. If you're doing it in installments, say you're doing it in £30 installments, well, you don't really feel that as much. The problem is, though, is next month when you get paid and you have your payment go out, you've got £30 less. And if you stick lots of things on there, all of a sudden next month when you get paid, you've got £300 less. And you're like, how did I end up like with £300 going out on all these buy now, pay later things? I have actually bought quite a lot of stuff, haven't I? And now I'm actually struggling to make ends meet this month. And that's, I think, where the problem comes in, is that, as I said at the start of me talking about this, it kind of almost makes perfect sense, but there are knock-on effects that occur, even for those who do stick by the rules and pay it all back, and suddenly might find that they're struggling to balance the books in a way that they didn't necessarily expect to. The final thing I'll say is, it has actually been a force for good in some ways, because it started to encourage loads of other places to offer people the opportunity to buy with no interest. So I am a committed secondhand mobile phone guy, right? I've owned two brand new mobile phones in my life. One was when I was 18. The other one I bought this year. And I bought that on zero interest from Apple. I was going to pay for it outright, and I could have paid for it outright. But Apple were doing a thing where they offered the ability to pay for it over 24 months. At, I don't know, it's like $15.99 a month, or it wasn't very much. And there was no interest on it. And I was like, well, I mean, I could do that. Well, I could just pay for it. I was like, no, I'll keep hold of my money and I'll take advantage of Apple. So I did that. And you are seeing more of that stuff. But then if I fall foul of the payments, then, you know, more fool me, etc. But it is, you know, anything that makes it less interest for people to buy stuff is good. Yeah. But it does encourage people to buy more stuff. And then all of a sudden you find out that $15.99 plus $15.99 plus $15.99 plus $15.99, I'm not going to do the maths, adds up.
Yeah, you make a very good point there about the sort of invisible spending. And you think, yeah, and then you forget a week or two later that you've already spent, you know, however much, 50 quid on something, and you spend another 50. What might be nice is if it displayed it on your bank balance as though that's gone out, but it hasn't really, if that makes sense. You know, available balance and not of it. That might make a difference.
Okay, like the pending thing, right? Yeah, that you exactly. Now see when money's going to come in or go out in the next couple of days. But it shows next month when you get paid how much down you're going to be on how much you'd normally get paid or something like that.
I'm guessing that's not going to happen. Lee, I want to talk to you about influencers. My bugbear. Influencers. They're being investigated with regard to this. You touched on it earlier, Advertising Standards Authority being, you know, very irresponsible. I mean, retail therapy is a thing, but let's not push it so much in a time of economic crisis. But generally speaking, influencers, I mean, is there regulation around them and what they can publish?
No, I'm not gonna sit here again and lay into influencers because, you know, a lot
not
of people
really,
have managed to carve out a career from posting photographs up on social media about documenting their lives and have carved out all sorts of niches. And some of them get paid absolutely astronomical amounts of money to put up one post promoting certain things. A lot of them get sent on nice holidays. All they have to do is take photos of themselves on holidays. Hey, it doesn't sound like a bad gig to me. But you're right, Georgie. There needs to be... there is regulation. So what happened was, a little while back, there was a lot of these posts going up and it was like the Wild West, and a lot of influencers would just take money to put up posts for basically anything and not describe it as an advert. And that's where a lot of problems arose, because as a normal person, especially the younger people who might use something like Instagram, looking at these posts, and I couldn't distinguish between what was being paid for and what was just a regular post. And it's very difficult to distinguish between the two. Now, if influencers get paid for something like that, they should put in that it's an advert. There should be somewhere in their post saying that it's an advert. And the Advertising Standards Authority have been quite hot on this, and they've been quite hot on it in terms of Klarna, because four influencers in the pandemic basically put up paid posts suggesting, you know, to buy some items that would make you feel good during the pandemic, almost encouraging people to say, hey, you know, just bung some cosmetics or whatever it was they were pushing onto Klarna. Mm-hmm. And it's feel good spending almost without even spending. And that's not good. And, you know, one of the reasons why that's not good, and actually I haven't really touched on this yet, is the fact that when you use Klarna or any of the buy now, pay later services, you're not really properly credit checked. So if you were taking out a credit card, when Simon was talking there, or interest-free credit, Simon there was talking about Apple, Simon probably has a very good credit rating, so he qualifies for that 0% deal. Not everyone would qualify for that deal, as not everyone would qualify for the best credit cards. And the people that don't qualify for those are the people that probably have had problems with credit in the past. And that is where a big problem with buy now, pay later is coming from, because people who might have bad credit histories are managing to sort of slip through the net, as it were, and make these purchases and make big purchases and again get themselves into trouble. And I know I've spoken a few times about this being mainly younger people that are doing this, but it's not actually. It is a quite a broad spectrum of people using this. I don't ask me why. I was watching QVC in the week, and even they're offering these split payments 0%. You know, so it is everywhere. And I wouldn't say QVC is a particular millennial sort of station to watch. You know, it's not really their target demographic. M&S, probably not their really targeted demographic, but they launched Buy Now, Pay Later earlier in the year. So it is getting everywhere. And I argued in this piece that I wrote earlier in the year that it could actually really make a serious dent into the credit card market. I reckon we could see credit card usage, credit card openings kind of start dropping off, because people might just start using this more, and where they would have maybe used a credit card in the past, they might just use buy now, pay later. It's a fascinating industry, Georgie. There's a reason why Klarna has become the most valuable fintech startup in Europe. You know, it's managing to cream enough money off retailers because more people are spending more. And, you know, in my opinion, if they are happy to be regulated, all the FCA has to do is have a look at it. There's been lots of calls for it to be regulated. Make it happen.
All right, we'll leave that to one side, but we are going to be sticking with sensible shopping choices and not buying all your Christmas gifts on Amazon and supporting local businesses. I think that is eminently a sensible thing to do. But is it possible? Simon says yes. I hope you do say yes, don't you, Simon? You've been digging around and got some tips and all that. But firstly, why?
Well, it's an eminently sensible thing to do because you want to support your local businesses who have had a really tough time. The people who've had the toughest time this year have tended to be small businesses, small local businesses. The pandemic, the lockdowns, the constantly changing rules have played right into the hands of the digital internet online giants who deliver stuff to our door and benefit from colossal economies of scale. And have not really played into the hands of non-essential shops that have been shut and then opened and then are being threatened with being shut again in January. The pub and hospitality industry, where the goalposts shift so much that they might as well just keep running around in circles on a field. And, you know, it's hard for the high street. We've seen lots of shops shut. We've seen some retailers absolutely hammered, some big British retailers absolutely hammered. I mean, we talked about this on the most recent podcast. Some of those, you know, they've got business issues, they've got big debts, they've got things like that. But even just the small shops on the high street, they don't have the footfall. People are more worried about going out. People have been told to stay at home when they can to avoid non-essential trips and so on and so on. And unfortunately, as this goes on, we just Amazon more and more stuff. I mean, the streets are just van after van, courier van after courier van after courier van at the moment. And so what I wrote my column about was trying to avoid Amazoning it all this Christmas. And I said at the start that, you know, there's a problem when a brand becomes a verb. When you start using the proper noun as a verb to do stuff, you know, a company has cornered too much in the market. So people will talk about Amazoning something. Oh, I'll Amazon it, you know. And I'm as guilty as the next person of doing it. I'm not anti-Amazon. I use it all the time. It's very useful. And I also am aware that lots of small sellers use Amazon as a platform as well. But, I mean, I just use it so much. I mean, and part of that is down to Prime membership. Now, I got tempted in by the gateway drug of wanting to watch the Grand Tour to see if it was any good with a free trial when it first started. And I don't want to know how many years ago the Grand Tour first started. And the answer to the question is not that amazing, to be honest. We were sat there one evening. My father-in-law was there and he's like, have you watched it? I was like, no. But I was like, but we could sign up for a free trial and we could watch it. I'll cancel it in a month. Never cancelled it. Added it to the list of subscriptions I've got. But that means delivery's free. And I had eased back a bit on Amazon because delivery had stopped being free. Oh, no, it stepped up. I mean, my recent orders, you know, books, power leads, light bulbs, Christmas light cables, a new bike wheel, that's just in the last month. Steady stream of stuff arriving at my doorstep. And if you think I'm bad, you should meet my wife. Okay. And I don't think she's even anywhere near half as bad as most people at Amazoning stuff to themselves. You know, low value items, the stuff that you would have just nipped into the hardware store for, like the Christmas light cable clips the other day. You know, I'd even have had to go to a B&Q or something, but I probably could have got some down the hardware store. I was like, oh, just $8.99, Amazon, click, I'll be here tomorrow, that kind of thing. So there was this figure that came out this week. Amazon has pocketed 40% of the extra £5 billion worth spent online by Britons throughout the coronavirus pandemic. That is unbelievable. I mean, you can see why Jeff Bezos is at $185 billion and counting on his wealth, can't you? I mean, his wealth has gone up stratospherically this year. And that figure was put out by the shadow business minister, Chi Onuwara, this on Wednesday, who was calling for more help for small businesses. I mean, some have done very well in the crisis. You know, they've pivoted, they've shifted a bit to online, done all this kind of stuff. But a lot of them have been absolutely battered. So what can you do? Well, you can try to make an active decision not to just Amazon stuff. The issue is, of course, is if you're like me and you do everything last minute or realize you need Christmas light cables, clips out of hours, the temptation is to just go, click. And it is so easy. You surf Amazon, you find what you want, one click ordering, it's at your door the next day, no delivery charges, except of course you are paying £7.99 a month on Prime subscription, you know, so there really is a delivery charge. But it's like, the thing is, I do this, yeah, I'm actually quite good at shopping local. I'm a committed shopper in my local butcher, local greengrocer, you know, things like that. I've been shopping on the local high street for years, but it's just some stuff I just have a blind spot with. So I'm trying to get around that. So this year, and I think books, games, records, CDs, you know, I still buy those old fashioned physical media items. I'm trying to get those from local shops, you know, so local bookstores. I mean, it's the one local to me is a Waterstones, but even supporting Waterstones, I think is better than just Amazoning it. Also, there's a website called Hive, which basically has an almost Amazon-like ability to find books and records and CDs and stuff like that. But then you can order them from local shops. They'll be fulfilled by local shops. You can either collect it or you can have it delivered for free. And that's a great opportunity. So when I've been asked for the dreaded Christmas list of stuff that you want by friends and family and have to rack my brains for anything that I haven't just bought myself over the past year, I've sent through the list of things like some books that I'd like and some records that I like and stuff using the links on Hive. Now, they'll probably just Amazon it, to be honest, but I thought it's a nudge. And then I've tried to, you know, do the same thing myself. There's another one that's opened up it's a US one that's just opened up in the UK called bookshop.org. Grace wrote about these in November. So we gave people more advanced warning than a certain Mr. Simon Lambert writing his column about this stuff for the 17th of December. Also then there's just the whole, just try and use your local shops and also search up your local shops online, because you might be surprised at how some of them have stepped up a gear. I mean, my favoured local butcher, which is in a village nearby, which is called the Farm Butchery, it's in Codicote in Hertfordshire, has just set up a new website with a comprehensive Christmas ordering page. I was quite impressed with it, kind of thing. And you wouldn't expect a little local butcher's in a village to do that. So I don't know, this year I think if you haven't already bought all your presents and you still have any to buy, just do what you can to give your money to some local shops or even just some UK-based businesses that pay a fairer amount of tax than just the giant that is Amazon, which it is so easy and it is so good. And you know, I don't think I want it to go away completely, but I do think that it's not great for the whole of the rest of the economy if 40% of the extra £5 billion spent online in the UK goes to one company.
No, agreed. But the sad thing is, I mean, talking about for Christmas, but it might be a little bit late, and Amazon is so reliable. That's what, you know, I'm waiting now over 3 weeks for some things I bought on Boots, which are never going to come for Christmas. And I'm not the only one. There are lots of people. And that's a big company that's really screwed up its delivery. So for smaller companies, it must be incredibly difficult. I like the click and collect, particularly around the books as well, because looking at the retail figures that were out this week, book retailers suffering 40% fall in sales during lockdown, biggest fall we've seen across any retailor or retail sector.
And also, before we finish pandemic small business talk, I would like to say something that I was moaning about before we started this podcast. Okay, yesterday, Hertfordshire, where I live, was put entirely into tier 3 along with some other areas. That was Thursday, right? On Monday, we had been told that a small part of Hertfordshire, South Hertfordshire, was going into tier 3 and the rest of it was going into tier 2. I do not understand why the government thinks it is acceptable to say one thing on a Monday and another thing 3 days later on a Thursday. And the way that impacts pubs restaurants, hospitality businesses, and people. But I went past my local pub yesterday. In fact, I stopped in for a pint. And I was talking, and I had some kind of substantial meal with it. Don't worry, Mr. Hancock, you don't need to come around and slap my wrists. And I was talking to the lady in the pub, and she said that they were in shock, absolute shock, because they had been told on Monday that they were going to be in tier two. And so they had planned tier two, right, that's it. We've got the Christmas week. We've got New Year. It's already super, super safe in the pub. Everybody's spread out. Table service only. Can only mix with your own household inside. Got to wear your mask when you stand up. You know, it couldn't be more socially distanced in those pubs. And actually, a lot of the pubs now, if they've got a garden, most people are sat outside anyway. But they've been told tier two, so they're like, right. So they got that. They planned the staff rota. They got the food in. They've ordered the booze in and everything. And then all of a sudden, 3 days later, whole place goes into tier three. Same with like a load of other counties. Everybody will have seen about this in the news. And now they've got a load of food that they can't sell, a load of booze that they can't sell. They're going to have to throw it away. And the other thing they said is they couldn't understand why it was coming in at midnight on the Saturday morning, so they don't get the Saturday trading, rather than leaving it so that they got the Saturday trading. And they said that would have been a £10,000 day for them of sales. It would have made a real difference. Mm-hmm. And that pub is a successful pub, right? That pub is going to be okay. It's probably not going to close down, right, because of this. But there are going to be pubs and restaurants across the country that never reopen or end up closing down. There are people losing their livelihoods over this. I understand we're in a pandemic. I understand we're trying to protect people's health. I understand all the other things that we're trying to do. But how can you tell people one thing on a Monday, high profile, didn't slip it out, it wasn't a leak, they stood up and said it on a Monday, and another thing on a Thursday? There are some people who have been ridden absolutely roughshod over by the government at the same time as money is being chucked around everywhere. And I think it is an absolute disgrace what has gone on with this.
Yeah. Honestly, Simon, I can't get started on this because I will not stop. And we sort of have a limit to the podcast that is reasonable for listeners to listen to, and they don't want to hear me rant for another while. But you've got an absolutely fair point there. But we're not going to stop talking about businesses just for a little bit, because Lee, I do want to talk to you about starting a new business. Let's try and look at this in a kind of more positive way, because we haven't heard great news about businesses, certainly in certain sectors. Freelancers, again, not doing very well, not a lot of support there coming from the Chancellor. However, I get the sense, I don't know, maybe this is just a lot of optimistic articles that are being written there by personal finance journalists, but that a lot of people are wanting, if nothing else, to think about starting their own business. That work-life balance perhaps has changed, not wanting to go on the commute when, and they will hopefully, get back to normal. But if you have the idea, I think this is the hard part, having the idea, but say you've got that, then what happens next? So for anyone who's got a brilliant business idea but they just don't have the know-how, what is out there to help them, Lee? First of all though, do you get a sense that people are wanting to start their own business a little bit more?
Well, out of a disaster, sometimes, Georgie, comes little sparks of creativity and light from people that are perhaps being put on furlough in the current crisis, or perhaps have lost their job and have had to think outside the box, or perhaps already are a small business owner and have had to completely change what it is that they were doing and change the way of doing things. So I think a lot of people have grand visions of business ideas, but they get bogged down by the thought of lots of things that you do obviously need to consider, things like funding, things like the red tape that you might require to get through to make it happen. And there's lots of different things that can put you off from doing it. I think the idea is that you need to have really sit down and a solid business plan, how it is that you're going to grow and how you're going to go forward, and what gap in the market it is that you are managing to solve. Almost now, we had a story this week about this company called Object Astra, which I think is really interesting. And actually, there's a lot of this that goes around the country, goes on around the world, almost like incubator / sort of networking type places where information shared is information for all, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of like lots of tips and help from people around the world that perhaps have already started their own business. Perhaps they have got some money that they want to invest in some other startups to help them off the ground. The idea of this Object Astra, which has been set up by this serial entrepreneur, is that you come up with a 150-word business pitch for what it is that you want to achieve. And it almost matchmakes you like a dating website with people that can help potentially become co-founders, co-creators, or simply just want to help you achieve what it is that you're setting out to do. Now, I think when it comes to starting up a business, people do just end up putting themselves off. And I can totally understand why, because it could be a risky business and you don't want to end up, thousands of pounds in the hole and never have gotten, getting this off the ground. But in that same breath, sometimes you have to be brave and sometimes you have to just go for it. Do you want to hear my elevator pitch? Do you want to hear my business idea? Okay, well, listen to Simon talk there. There's quite a few shops in my local area within a half a mile radius. I would say there's a good, 24 shops, hardware stores, bookstores, toy shops, all of that kind of thing. I see Amazon obviously dominating the market where things like Simon's talking about getting his Christmas tree clips, right? I know that the local hardware store are doing those. Can I get out and do it at the moment? Well, not really, because I'm at work and there's all these restrictions. Amazon and all these other delivery vans, there are loads of them. Pollution is obviously a hot topic. And of course it should be a hot topic, emissions and all those kind of things. The amount of van deliveries and the amount of people that are just leaving their vans and cars running as they're making all of these deliveries is quite atrocious in my mind. I reckon get a handful of people on their bikes, local, I give them a call, almost like a private shopper for me. I need some Christmas tree clips. I need a copy of Great Expectations. I need a pack of sausages for the butchers. And can you pick me up a toy for my 2-year-old daughter from the toy shop? And a flat delivery charge comes and cycles it round. It's only up the road, comes and drops it off. I pay a flat £5 delivery charge. Bosh, done. There it is. And all these local businesses don't have to set up fancy websites. They can just tell me whether or not they've got Great Expectations in stock, if they've got some Lancashire sausages in stock, and it comes and gets delivered to me. I'm going to put this on Object Astra this week, and I'm going to let you know if I get funding.
You won't have the issue of loads of people going into shops and touching things.
Exactly. You could even say to the hardware store, he could come out, the person that owns the shop could even come out of the shop, hand it to you with a litter picker if you wanted. You could go real social distancing. I've already paid for it on the app that I've built, and it's here. And I've got my Christmas tree clips within half an hour. There's no pollution, no vans, no money going to Amazon that you could argue doesn't pay a fair share of tax in the UK. And we're supporting the little guy. There we go. I'm calling the app
Simon.
Beyond the point that nobody's going to buy Christmas light clips, and these are clips to hang lights on the outside of the building, just to be clear, rather than the tree. I don't clip my Christmas lights to my tree. Beyond the point that nobody's going to buy those in the middle of summer, you should have thought of this idea earlier this year, Boise, when all the kids weren't at school. They could have just all been cycling around on their bikes, getting stuff for people and chucking it to people's doorsteps, like Paperboy.
Yeah. Bit of child labour, nothing wrong with that, eh, Simon? Yes.
Being a global pandemic. To be honest, it would have massively increased the productivity in this country for all the parents who were stuck homeschooling
their
children. That
is very, very true. Simon, before I leave this, I do want to just ask a little bit of advice coming from you and your perspective. Any advice for anyone thinking of starting a business now, coronavirus and Brexit looming?
I think that this idea, this Object Astra thing, is a really good idea, because a lot of people have ideas to start up businesses, but they don't necessarily have the wherewithal or the know-how to do things like, for example, if you've thought of an app, most people don't know an app developer or how to find an app developer. And so it means that the ability to start those businesses is concentrated in quite a small chunk of society, whereas lots of people have good ideas. And in fact, it's such a good idea that I actually thought of this idea some years ago and thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a website where you could connect people who had a business idea with people who could fulfill it? Maybe I should set that up. Unfortunately, I don't quite have enough entrepreneurial spirit to actually do stuff rather than just think about it. So that would be my first tip. Have the entrepreneurial spirit to actually do stuff rather than just think about it. Secondly, target bits of the market where you think there's a gap opening up. And thirdly, it might sound like an awful time to start a business, but actually lots of business people will tell you the best time to start a business is in a recession, because you have less competition, to be honest, and that sounds really brutal, but you have that bit of creative destruction going on. you have the opportunity to spot what's changing and what can possibly profit as you come out. And it's much easier to set up a business in a capital light way nowadays, so you don't have to invest large amounts of money into it. You can start small, you can build it up. The internet is your shopfront, basically. And you know, we talked about Amazon earlier. It is a marketplace as well. eBay is a marketplace as well. You can use those as a digital shopfront in a much more cost effective way than actually taking the lease on a shop. Peter Hargreaves, co-founder of Hargreaves Lansdown, we did an interview with him recently. Jane Arana, our reporter, did. It's a great interview. He was talking about business and starting up businesses, small businesses, and he said he thinks now would be a great time to do it, because if you can thrive in the face of adversity, you can definitely thrive when things are going well.
If you can thrive in the face of adversity, yes, indeed. Good luck if that is you. Meanwhile, Bank of England policymakers, they are not seeing Brexit and that sort of, this sort of time as an opportunity to rock the boat. They're staying quite steady, talking about interest rates, decided to keep interest rates on hold, left the bond buying programme unchanged as they await the outcome of EU trade deal talks. Simon, just briefly, your thoughts on that?
Yes. The Bank of England is not a thrive in the face of adversity kind of organisation. It's a play it safe, Stan, kind of organisation. And they have decided that, well, I mean, there's quite a lot of debate as to whether cutting interest rates would be completely pointless anyway. I think if there's one thing the country is largely, one issue that a divided and fragmented country can largely be grouped around, it's that we don't really want negative interest rates. So I'm not really sure why delivering negative interest rates would be seen as a positive for the economy. It could chuck a bit more cash around and splash the cash. I think the Bank of England's actually looking at it and going, the economy's doing much better than we thought it was going to be doing, all things considered. And yeah, we've still got Brexit coming up, and you know, who knows what's going to happen there. We might have a trade deal by the time people listen to this podcast. We might not have a trade deal by New Year's Eve. We might get a trade deal on New Year's Eve. We might start the new year with a nice lorry park on the motorway. Who knows? And who knows how damaging that would be to the economy? It's very difficult to tell. It's getting a boost at the moment from people stocking up and stockpiling. So, you know, there could be a scenario where we get a deal and then that ends up being bad for the economy because we get the hangover from the stockpiling. So, you know, the Bank of England's absolutely right to sit on its hands and do nothing at the moment. Also, everyone's waiting to see what happens in America with the Fed and kind of stimulus over there and the government, the Biden government, when he eventually comes in, whether they're going to unleash another big stimulus package as well. So it's not surprising that they've decided that now is not the time to do anything spectacular.
All right, from that to something spectacular. Grace is on the case. This is a brand new column where This Is Money's very own Grace Gorsden takes up the problems of readers. And this week, it's all about mobile phone contracts and Sky. Grace joins us now. It's a bit exciting. So Grace, welcome. Before you tell us about this particular issue you've been looking into on behalf of one of your readers, tell us about Grace on the case.
Well, Grace on the case, it's very exciting. I've been looking into readers' consumer issues, of which there are many, as you can imagine, especially this year, 2020, with so many people relying on deliveries and services coming to them. I've had so many emails about various issues, and I really wanted to take a moment to have a space to address them properly. Yeah, so we've had so many emails on the back of it, and I'm trying to help as many people as possible.
Is delivery one of the big themes that have been, deliveries, the big themes that have been coming through at the moment? I mean, what are some of the general overarching issues that people have been having? Is it pretty broad?
Absolutely, yeah. And my first Grace on the case was actually about an IKEA delivery that had gone awry. And it turned out that IKEA, one of the biggest furniture stores in Europe, was arranging delivery dates and then just never turning up with them. And people were paying, you know, southwards of £50 for these deliveries, and they could not get through to the company to find out where their deliveries were. And obviously there's been a lot of stress on companies, delivery firms this year, as we know, as so many people are relying on them. But to have no contact, no communication, it has been quite worrying and quite distressing actually for a lot of people.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, so what's the latest problem you've been looking into? Explain this in a bit more detail, if you would, Grace.
So this week we heard from a gentleman who very unfortunately was robbed. Not only was his car stolen, his credit cards, but also his brand new smartphone, which had been delivered from Sky Mobile only the day before. He hadn't even unpackaged it yet. Unfortunately, it was stolen. He told Sky Mobile, his mobile phone company, about the robbery, and they simply said, well, you've taken out this contract for 36 months. You're going to need to pay it all back, totaling, I think it was around £2,200, which is a lot of money for something you've never even used. Yeah, exactly. He called it an expensive paperweight, and I think that was very telling. So what happened was he contacted his insurance firm, his home insurance company. They did manage to pay him back the bulk of it, around £1,700, which was great. But it did leave a gap of about £500 that he had to pay to Sky, which he was really not happy about. He did enter into a contract. So understandably, you have to fulfill that. You have to pay it back. But for something he hadn't even used once, you can understand the frustration. So I spoke to Sky Mobile about it. We managed to get £150 off, leaving him with a bill of £300, which is not ideal, but it's still so much better than the £2,200 he could have had to pay up front.
Is there a way that people can do this without having to get this is money involved? Or do you think, Grace, that actually it's getting a lot more difficult for people?
Well, I think a lot of people do turn to us at This Is Money when they are sort of, they can't get any further with their cases, sorry, excuse me. And they shouldn't have to always come to us, absolutely not. They should be able to use the correct channels. There should be enough customer services in place in various situations for them to be able to get things sorted. But as we see time and time again, once This Is Money gets involved, fortunately for many people, we can resolve their issues and get their money back. But as I said, really, this should be something, there's consumer rights acts in place that people should be able to refer to and get the refunds they deserve, get their deliveries when they pay for them. But it's just not always happening, unfortunately.
It seems grossly unfair to have to pay anything at all in this situation.
I agree. And that's why I took it on, because I could understand where his frustration was. And as I said, it wasn't just his phone, it was his car and his credit card and everything else. So having to deal with that all at once just before Christmas, if we can help in any way, then we should.
Absolutely. Well, how can people get in contact, Grace, if they've got an issue they want you to get involved with?
You can email me at grace.gausden, which is G-A-U-S-D-E-N at thisismoney.co.uk.
Marvellous. Simon, just a word, if you would. Grace on the case.
Yes, Grace has done a fabulous job with the first few of these Grace on the Case columns. And we've also featured in each of them a winner and a loser of the week, haven't we? Have we called them the winners and the losers?
Hit and miss.
Hit and miss. Yeah, there you go. The editor of a popular website gets information on his website wrong. Grace, tell us about the hits and misses and what the idea is behind that as well.
Well, I wanted to include companies as well that have actually done really well for their customers. It's not as frequent as you'd hope, people getting in touch saying, oh, how wonderful firms are, but they do. And it's nice to, you know, highlight these companies that have gone out of their way to deliver really good customer service. Aside with that, we have included a miss, as there are, unfortunately, so many firms, companies, problems people get in touch with that they want sorted. And they're just little bits at the end calling out good customer service, but also highlighting perhaps firms that have got it wrong, but not always so drastically as within the main story.
So if you've got someone who's done some really good customer service for you, give us a shout about that as well.
Please. Yeah. Please do. Yes.
All right then. Will do. Okay, thank you very much, Grace. Thank you very much, Lee. Thank you, Simon. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney. You can tweet us at thisismoney. And you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate in reader comments. And I should say, actually, that we did have an email last week talking about my comments about the Brexit situation being entirely avoidable. And saying that, look, it's a negotiation. Negotiations always go down to the wire. And if a negotiation doesn't go down to the wire, then you've not negotiated very well. Now, I would tend to agree with that. And I would say that a negotiation will normally go down to the wire. If it's the EU you're negotiating with, it will go to the wire and then go over the wire just a little bit at the other end. It's an organisation that specialises with kicking the can down the road. And that arguably, yes, there are things that we shouldn't be giving up and so on and so on, but there are ways around it. My comment on this being entirely avoidable was actually not related to the negotiations. It was related to the fact that we are staring down the barrel of this super hard no deal, WTO, no deal Brexit, you know, lorry queues, etc., at the same time as dealing with the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic, having been offered the opportunity to extend the deadline earlier this year at a time when the coronavirus pandemic was already in existence and people were talking about a second wave in winter. The second wave of winter is not a surprise event. The coronavirus pandemic, arguably a black swan. The second wave in winter, everyone was talking about it in April when we'd only just started the pandemic. And we were offered the opportunity then. And I think it was posturing and it was macho and it was symptomatic of some of the attitude at the top of our government. There's like, no, we're not going to extend the deadline, even with coronavirus. They could have just extended it to June, when probably the pandemic's not going to be anywhere near as bad. And if we were going to go to the wire and argue for WTO, hard Brexit, we'll take the queues and lorries, we'll take our chances, it would have been better to do it at a time when the country wasn't panicking about dealing with coronavirus. And the weather was nicer too. So yeah, there you go. That was what I was saying. But thank you very much for getting in touch and sending us your thoughts to our listener, because I very much enjoyed reading it. And I'm replying here now.
Keep them coming. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.